Well, after the chaos, the drama, the excitement of landing in Japan and going straight into a live show last week, the Shibuya crossing and all the noise and colour and a razzmatazz that brought, we're slightly more zen this week. We're at the Joganji Temple.
It's great movie that, wasn't it, with Robin Williams? No. I haven't seen him around here today.
No.
Dead.
Again.
No. I love how Sun shouts, he's dead.
Yeah, okay, we've had these gags before and one or two problems with them. That might or might not make the final show. Right. However, after the chaos of last week, we're very zen this week at the Joganji Temple, built in the 1300s. And amazingly, we're just going to wander around the corner here because it was also part of the set for the remarkable film Lost in Translation, starring Bill Murray and Scarlett Johansson, who's a big fan of the show, apparently.
Which one are we? Which one are you, Bill Murray, and I'm Scarlett Johansson?
Yes, I think you're the big blonde and I am the slightly old, lost,
washed up
geography teacher.
I tell you who's missing.
Is.
Which is lucky because Lost in Translation has got two main stars, is we've lost one of our stars. Yes. Mike Spindle Tindle has been absorbed by Tokyo, it appears.
Well, you say that. He was last seen with his golf clubs at about 11 a.m. in the morning, heading off to play golf with none other than Tiger Woods.
I feel like
I just sort of wonder that we haven't heard from him since, whether Tins has taken Tiger off the tracks or Tiger's taken Tins off the tracks.
They were last seen in a Denny's car park, which is never good. I'm a little bit concerned that he's traded us in for Brian O'Driscoll,
Brian O'Banner, George Gregan,
and
Justin Marshall.
And Tiger Woods as well.
And Tiger Woods.
I'm very upset. McElroy. But we've had a hell of a time. We've obviously been to Hiroshima, the emotional turmoil of that, getting stuck there, losing the... Well, we'll talk about more about what we lost.
It's not going to that anymore. It's a little raw.
It is a bit raw. I've been tour guide. I've taken you to high-end coffee places, restaurants. I've pretty much delivered, looked after you in Tins.
I did the National Science Museum. That was a lot of fun. About molecules
on his own
and magnets.
And he thought how disappointing he was. He got there and he realised everything was in Japanese and he couldn't read anything. And all he wanted to do was film a funny scene involving a penny farthing, because now he's turned into a social media guru slash.
I haven't. I'm just so reluctant.
You're a whore. You're a media whore.
We're going to go on the tube. Come and join us and we're in Peter O'Coles in a few. I've done it again!
It's not
in Peter
way,
Coles in a few moments' time.
By the way, he keeps trying to make it more Irish. Peter Coles is the most un-Irish Irish bar in the world. We're going to go with Peter O'Coles for branding. See ya.
Crouch, bind, set.
Joe presents the House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
A very, very warm welcome to you beautiful people here at Peter Coles Bar in Tokyo!
Yes.
Can we have another even bigger cheer for the main man who's come dressed as a banana this evening, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. James Haskell! Are we going, does it feel like we're going global this evening?
Yeah, I think we've got mega. Some Kiwis are here, some Welsh people are here. I saw some Scots here, flight must have been delayed, never mind.
Yeah, very good. Lost on tour.
Yeah. I'm very excited, actually. Do you know what's really, really positive? It's last time we came here, very male-dominated audience we have, but there is a smattering of women in the house, so give us a round of applause for all the ladies in the house. Thank you. Your boyfriends have picked the worst date nights for you ever, but listen... Knowing you as I do, you will punish him later, I'm sure. Well, actually... my wife might wonder why I know and why you will punish her, but I may just give you a hard time. That's what I was trying to say, yeah. It's all right, keep digging.
Keep going.
Yeah.
We've actually got a gag that we're going to weave in at this point.
Yeah. Why? Don't shake your fucking head at me. That's not bad. That's not bad.
So we've got a gag that we've obviously been setting this gag up, having been to the temple earlier.
Yeah.
It would actually be quite funny just to forget about him.
I told you, I could do the whole show
just
myself.
Just leave him in there for a little bit longer. We went filming this afternoon, as you know. We've no idea where Tins is. Have you got any clues as to where our third cog is?
Well, I messaged... Third cog, close to something else, something.
Yeah.
We messaged him. We got absolutely no contact. Last time he was seen hanging out with better people than us, better celebrities, Tiger Woods. He pied us off for dinner.
Yeah.
So we ordered food for three last night. I had to finish all of it because you fanned it out after the starter.
I like salad niçoise.
So, I was out of breath, sort of, carrying the dar around the town. I had to be carried down by 17 Japanese blokes.
Yep.
But that's it. I've not seen anything about him. I'm a little bit concerned. Either he's dropped us like a hot potato or he's actually might have...
He might have come straight to the venue. Do you just surreptitiously want to check
behind
the magic door?
In the closet. I tell you what, if he actually came out of the closet tonight, this rating should go
to
the roof. Well, it'd be unbelievable scenes. Zoe would be devastated.
Be
he's asleep.
Oh, he's nodded off.
Here
he's genuinely nodded off.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mike
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Mike Tindall!
Ironically, after our Hiroshima
experience
where I slept in a broom cover for the whole night, I find small spaces really engaging.
Should we explain to him what this is about? Because it's a bit of a
contentious
issue.
That would never work for Haas because his ego would never fit.
Very good. So you have to cut it off and leave it at the door.
There's two things we need to clear up. The reason I'm wearing this ill-fitting T-shirt is our clothing brand merchandise is live. I actually had a proper T-shirt that fitted me. I wasn't shopping at Baby Cap, like normal. But Mike's gone with that one. I've gone for this one, get all aboard the Haas train. If you go to www.shop.joe.co.uk, you can pick up any of this stuff. But the reason we're talking about tins being a broom cupboard, have you done it? Well done. We actually had a trip to Hiroshima recently. And it was all going swimmingly. Saturday. And we watched England beat Australia, which was unbelievable.
Have we got any brave Australians who've come tonight? The cameraman, who has to be here. God, you're going to get a lot of it over the next week or so.
So we, obviously we went there. We got caught up in the whole atmosphere, the mood, and we decided we would stay to watch Ireland potentially beat New Zealand. And we missed our last trains. Unfortunately, there was no more trains. So, being the good person that I am, I decided to book rooms for the lads, book rooms for the whole team. But I was told, I was told that
was Si going. That's bullshit.
Yeah. You know, basically, Si was busy at the time, and he decided that he didn't want a room. So me and the lads went off to this hotel, checked in. And what I said when I checked in was like, listen, we need some rooms for the lads. Can't leave them out in the cold, being the ultimate team player that I am. And we got into a room. What they did is they sold us the dream. They said, would you like the penthouse? I said, well, you know, I'm unfamiliar with the penthouse. Mr. Tindall said he's very accustomed to the presidential suite. And they kept saying three into one. I said, sounds like a good deal to me. So
normally how Haas rolls.
Yeah.
Just ripples to the back. Yeah, exactly. It's like a wave.
It's a grower, they call it. And basically, we decided to get this room. When we turned up in this room, unfortunately, it was actually three of us in one bedroom. But it gave a lot of real estate for the lads, part of the team, the camera people and Si to come and sleep. But Si refused to come. He wanted to be a martyr. So they all slept in McDonald's in Hiroshima. But Mike, realising that there was space, decided to go and get his own room.
To allow more space for the crew.
And they actually just gave him a free room, but it turned out to actually be a broom cupboard. And the only reason he woke up next day was a woman came and collected the mop. So it wasn't great. There's been a little bit of contention in the group, but I feel like we've come together again now.
Yeah. So I apologise to you.
Yeah, so I did. The best thing was that Si apologised for messing up. And
Si's like, get this microphone to work. It's a fucking lie. Pascal, you...
But you know what the good thing is? A man of Si's age admitting that he's wrong is, I think, really important. So we should give him a round of applause for admitting that he's wrong.
He's actually going puke with anger.
He's saying okay, or he's doing this. I'm not entirely sure. Is that okay? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
£20 says that ain't appearing in the You heard it all here first, so that's been edited out.
You've made a new friend this week.
I did make a new friend.
Do you
friend
want to tell
week?
Our new friends about your new friend?
I got to play golf with Tiger Woods yesterday. He was my partner.
That is unbelievable.
I was a bit nervous when he said that he was my partner. Am I the giver or the taker? Sorry.
You haven't sobered up from yesterday,
no,
have you?
No, not really.
No, good.
Yeah, so it was very good. But then I played the hole with him.
Did you? Was it the post-match? Was the post-match at a Denny's car park? Or was it?
Yeah, he was like, I'll meet you at Denny's. And I was like, what's that?
Oi, Google that if you don't understand that joke, because it actually works on a number of levels. You'll probably be laughing tomorrow if you look into it.
So I teed off. Funnily enough, my tee shot wasn't as good as his tee shot, so he used his tee shot. So he put his marker down by the ball, and it was a quarter. So I picked it up. I was like, cheers, mate. I'm definitely nicking that. Put it in my pocket. So we played the hole. We didn't win the hole, but we didn't lose it because it's skinned, so it's perfect. And anyway, we're down the... We then start following them down the hole, the rest of the holes to play. And his agent has gone to Matt Dawson going, look, can you go to Mike Tindall and get that quarterback, please? Like, Tiger wants it. And so Dawson comes up to me and goes, can I have the quarterback? I'm like, no, mate, you're not nicking the quarter. This is my Tiger's quarter. Yeah. He's got like a billion others. Yeah. And he goes,
he had a billion others.
Yeah, well, he goes, no, this...
They take half.
And I actually Googled this.
That's good, Haas. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
And I Googled it. He goes, no, that's Tiger's 1932 quarter. That is the year that his dad was born. He's won 15 majors with this quarter. And he wants it back. I said, well, why hasn't he fucking come and asked for it back himself? He goes, because he's a little bit worried that you won't give it back.
Did you just pull out a handful of loose shrapnel and sort of dig around trying to find it?
I was like, there's a 500 yen coin? No? Good enough. No, so I had to give it back, which is unfortunate. But
you've met some fairly impressive people. In fact, you're in a family with some fairly impressive people. But was there a little bit of fanboying?
Massive fanboy. Literally. I am an obsessive golfer now. So he is one of the icons, the greatest icon of golf, I think. You know, obviously, you can talk about Nicholas and a few others. Yeah, Palmer.
Norman. Good reference.
Player. He's completely changed the game. And you see now when he goes to a tournament that if he turns up at a tournament, the crowds go up by something like 90%.
Yeah.
It's just astronomical. And he was absolutely lovely. He was engaging. Not sure he knew that. He definitely Googled rugby. Not sure he knew that much about it.
But, right.
He was like, well, do you prefer a league or union? And I was like, well, I only played union. So what do you fucking think?
Good, he's
but obviously,
research,
he had a Kiwi caddy for a long time.
Oh, he did,
And would have known a little bit about the All Blacks. But no, he was great. And it was just amazing to be. If you think of McIlroy, Tiger, Jason Day and Matsuyama, there's not many better golfers out there. Just to follow them around and be allowed to be this close whilst they're playing shots and what they try and do with a golf ball. It was incredible.
He went to play golf with Tiger yesterday. You went and did jiu-jitsu.
Went through jiu-jitsu, yeah.
I went to the Science Museum, which was very nice.
But tell people why, because we're going to come on to something very exciting. No, it was. The reason he went in there is because both of them have become a bit of social media animals.
Now,
Tins is now on Instagram, posting left, right and centre. Even his wife, Zoe, says that he's turned into me, right? Alex has decided that he wants to get on social media, so he went into this museum because he spotted a penny farthing and thought that it would be the absolute chat to end all chats to get a photo of him on a penny farthing, being the posh bastard that he is. But when he got into the Science Museum, he tried to educate himself, realising it was all in Japanese, so it was a complete wasted trip for him. Yeah. But that being said...
We can testify for how posh he is.
Yeah.
What is the name of your friend that is here tonight?
Because look, we'll just say that. So Tins has got some friends here from Mitch Hampton, right, the club he plays at. I've got nobody here because nobody likes me. But Alex always brings people to different shows. I don't know if you've listened to any of the live shows in the UK. We had some bloke wearing head-to-foot tweed. Sorry. We had some guy wearing like... And that was like country tweed. Then we had a bloke wearing urban tweed. It's where you've got like business at three but shooting at four. There is a bloke here today with, incredibly, the best name in the history of the earth. Tell everybody here what the name of the friend is you brought to this event, your posh git.
My friend this evening is called Fromwaz Waddle Dudley.
Would you like
From
to get... Would you
Waz
like,
Waddle would you like to get, Dudley.
Would you like give to us get away, Fromwaz. Give us away.
Whoa!
I mean...
Have you ever, ever...
Honestly... I reckon
I'm tracking you
how
up.
How he's ever
laces.
Allowed out of the UK? I have no idea.
I reckon a night out with them must be a full Downton Abbey spec. Honestly,
literally.
Servants facing the wall, hot tureens, bullshit.
He must be in a smoking jacket.
He's in a gilet, of course.
He's in a gilet.
Honestly, always posh people can't leave the house without a gilet in case they've got to go shooting, round up some sort of horse, deal with a dog
or a little vesticle.
I think he's told the office he's sick for 3 days. As well,
or,
so
or a cardigan. What age can you start wearing cardigans around town? I've always wanted to know that. Just asking for a friend.
Don't laugh.
Yeah.
Do not laugh.
The laughter will fuel me and you'll keep
buried. Very quickly going back, so obviously, Tiger, one of your fanboys, if you could meet anyone in world sport, any sport, who would be your biggest fanboy?
I would like to meet Floyd Mayweather, Alex.
Yeah, okay, that's allowed through. Let's have a round of applause for a sensible answer.
It's always good that you get him to bite his tongue on the second take.
I'm being censored. It's not fair, is it? I shouldn't
Rightly
be censored.
Ladies and gentlemen,
should I be censored? No, absolutely
Rightly
not.
So. We've got a special guest this evening. Should we welcome our special guest?
Of course,
because otherwise we're falling apart at the seams. Ladies and gents,
sure we've got enough space?
No,
well,
no.
I don't know. I'm not quite sure. We have to wheel the barrels out of it. Ladies and gents, we have not one, but two World Cup winners on the show this evening. Sorry about that ask. Here's one of the all-time greats, the skipper in the 2007 Rugby World Cup final for the Springboks, ladies and gents. It is the one, the only, the great Mr. John Smith! All right, big man, come on in. Are you happy squeezing in there?
Yeah, I'm in.
Welcome aboard. You were out with Tins last night. Did you go longer or shorter, if I can put it that way?
I think that I would have gone substantially shorter.
Right.
I didn't spend the whole day in a cupboard. So
right.
Good night. I was about an hour and a half before Tim. So
okay.
Yeah.
He has got a great diet now. I think I clocked him doing at least 7 cheeseburgers yesterday.
just talk me through
the diet
that.
Of champions.
But, you know, I don't want to get an elbow in the head, but talk to me about the Backies Botha John Schmidt diet that happens when you go back to South Africa, because Backies Botha now resembles a minibus with a face.
Yeah.
And he was a big unit to start with. Is it just a diet of like pure red meat and
beer
and red wine?
You know what I think gets us is, well, when I say us, I mean Backies, because I'm obviously an athlete.
I was thinking that. I meant Backies. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. I'm sure, yeah.
I think what gets
the quote of yesterday was he goes, at least 160 more steps till I can get another cheeseburger. That was his quote yesterday.
That's quote, amazing.
Well, there's a target.
There's a target.
Yeah, exactly.
Target for a burger.
And it's the only reason I train. Everyone always asks why I'm training, and it's so that I can eat and drink and be happy. But the fundamental problem Backies does have is that he's got his own butchery now.
Right.
He's got like Backies Boerewors. You guys know Boerewors.
Yeah.
Explain to people what Boerewors is.
I have no idea. So
isn't it like South African sausage?
I was trying to be worldly.
Sausage, yes, basically. So he now makes his own meat. So he's got a copious amounts of red meat. But I think there's also this local drink called Brandy and Coke.
It's local.
Yeah. Trevor Leota used to like them as well.
It's a massive escalator, and it only takes you one way, and it's up.
Right, fine.
In both your
skin folds and weight.
In both your skin folds and your enjoyment factor.
Are you bigger or smaller than when you were playing?
I'm exactly the same.
Composition?
I would say my ratio of body weight to fat percentage has.
Slightly
varied. Yeah. I've gotten a little bit addicted to the watt bike and the bicycle a little bit. So I'm almost like a hibernating.
It's like Donkey Kong on a bike.
Yeah.
Do you use the bicycle to go between McDonald's? Is that what I'm...
I remember once following Victor Obogu on the bike, and I could swear I could not see the saddle. I didn't know. You couldn't have even told whether there was actually a saddle on there or whether he was just really enjoying himself.
We've had too much time together. Who has fallen fastest by the wayside
of the
people you play with and known?
What's scary, I don't mind getting a bit bigger and slightly more rotund. It's the dudes that go into like Iron Men. So, you know, like you meet a rugby player, you see them, they've got a certain size, and then you meet them, they're like, they're wizened. You want to set up a GoFundMe page for them or a Just Giving page. You see them, you're like, oh my God, what has happened to you? Are you okay? I'm really sorry. My condolences. They're like, no, I'm just doing Iron Men or getting into triathlons.
Ryan Jones.
Yeah. That's exactly what I think of.
I thought, what disease he had. Oh, Richie. Yeah. But then Richard Webster. Remember Richard Webster?
Yes, I do, yes.
I mean, he was old school Welsh, literally hard as nails. This is a guy who played a game with Scott Gibbs where they threw darts at each other from 10 yards. The only rule was you weren't allowed to throw above the neckline.
Bloody hell.
Never touch the hair or face.
Yeah, who does that? But he literally, his knees are fooked, and he did an Iron Man. He literally must have lost 10 stone. He would have been 10 stone when he did this. And he couldn't run. His knees were buggered, so he did it on crutches. I'm like, why the fuck would you want to do that? He goes, well, to finish. Right. I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Why do you even start it? You knew you weren't going to be able to finish it.
Did you see the pictures of Greenwood? Happy birthday, Will Greenwood. 47 yesterday, I think. Did you see the pictures of him? He's in better nick than when he was playing.
If he turns side on, you can't see him.
No. Well, apart from the nose, I can't say that I've done enough work with him, thankfully, over the years. Do you still see a lot of your 07 crew?
We do. We've got this WhatsApp group that keeps us connected. But we see quite a bit of the guys. A lot of the guys.
And you had a dinner, didn't you? The 95 and the 97.
We had a lunch between 95 and 07. Yeah. And I started drinking whiskey a little bit early.
Right.
and then a Skulk Burger carried me back to my room, which was
Did
fantastic.
He really?
Yeah.
Skulk Senior or Skulk Junior?
No, Skulk Junior. No.
If you ever meet Skulk Burger Senior.
Hagrid.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. He's got massive hands there.
He's the only man that scared me. Like, he grabbed my wife's hand, and literally she was like, this is the biggest human being.
He's got a very nice vineyard. Don't they have a nice vineyard?
They have a very beautiful wine farm, and a great label as well, actually. Actually, when the Skulk was in 07, they started their sort of premium label, which was Number 6. Very, very, very nice. Creative.
Yeah, I like what they've done there. Keeping it in the house, keeping it on brand.
Yeah.
And how are your crew as a general trend?
Some of the blokes are still playing. I mean, there's one of them in the squad here in Japan. So, the difficulty about getting the guys together is always the fact that they've been playing for the last 12 years. But the banter is pretty good. We've got a few rules. You know, a lot of talk about the current Springboks.
Okay.
You know, a lot of talk politics. right. And you have to contain your pornography.
Right.
Well, just let you know.
Does everyone break the boundaries on that level?
Just let you know, I haven't won a World Cup, but that rules me out of that. I don't want to win if that's the rules.
And I'll tell you why it's a rule, because a lot of the blokes from in-country aren't that good with the technical side of phones.
Right.
And they're quite, not quite sure how to lock a phone or keep their kids from getting into their content.
Right.
And that was why
it became on Apple TV.
Or even worse, is they accidentally send it to someone they don't mean to. Yeah. That's more of a case. Yeah.
But it was funny because we, you know, obviously on this show we cover transitions and everything with Hask. We talked about transitions, and some of those guys are still the 2007 lot are struggling with their transition from rugby to playing. And we we had a deep meeting for at 3 o'clock this morning.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, yeah.
Put the world to rights.
Yeah, it's amazing.
How can you remember that conversation? Don't remember speaking to Zoe on FaceTime.
I know.
Or remembering to set alarm. So, you know.
Or turning up to record. That would have been a nice touch as well, Tins. How's your tournament been? When did you get out here and what have you been doing? And what's
been here
busy?
For 7 days. Landed on Tuesday and it's been an aggressive start.
Right.
We're here doing some broadcasting work and some work with some of the sponsors, but I'm not sure that I'll be able to maintain this for another 2 weeks.
Right. Going for a bit of dialysis in order to see you through the semis and the final.
Yeah, I'm just... it's hard to get the balance right in this place.
Right. All in or all out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I actually put something on social media today around... we've been out and some nights have been more aggressive than others, but there's always someone that's arriving.
Yeah.
There's always a player that you played against that's there or in and around town and you meet up and... It's unbelievable that drinking and singing are one and the same thing in this town. I've done more singing, and Saffers don't sing. We're terrible.
Really?
Yeah.
But do you have a tuning fork and a sort of a... I mean, have you got a bit of form in the voice box?
I'm terrible. Oh, I'm terrible. But I'm when I get going, especially if it's like late at night, I'm very confident.
What is your karaoke weapon of choice?
Wonderwall.
How does that go? Which one's that?
Thank God, I should have said Vanilla Ice.
Yeah,
yes,
that's your thing. What have you made of the tournament as a whole and Japan and breaking new ground and
for me, I've never been to Japan, so this was an amazingly new experience and I've been fortunate to travel the world, but this is so different in so many ways. I think the cool thing about this tournament from a rugby point of view is that there's so many more teams here that are competitive and have got a chance sort of towards the end. I reckon the best 8 got through. I think the best 4 have gotten through to the semi-finals. But from an experience point of view, it's magical. You can get, if you don't get lost at least once a day, trying to understand or Google Translate, and I think that takes you to different places. So for me, it's been an amazing experience in 7 days. I do need to spend a little bit more time during the day out.
Yeah. what is your average get out of bed time?
Well, what I will say is that I've done one Hong Kong sevens, and that's like an Iron Man. That's an endurance event.
Don't see daylight.
This is like Hong Kong on steroids, really.
Yes.
So it's been phenomenal. For me, the thing that I've found with Japan is that the people here are so amazing. They're so respectful. I feel bad. You know, they're opening doors.
Yeah.
My first day, I was looking for an ATM to get some cash, and because the Roppongi doesn't accept credit cards,
probably a good thing.
Yeah. Probably a good thing. You want to be traceable in
Roppongi. Expense a lot of that.
Yeah.
And so I said to this bloke, it was in a secondhand golf shop, a young guy who was running the shop, and I said, "Do you know where an ATM is?" So he goes, "Yeah." So he said, "Follow me." So he left his shop and walked 2 blocks down the road to a 7-Eleven for an ATM. My first day here. She pointed to the machine, said, "Is this what you want?" I said, "Yeah, thank you." Waited for me to get finished and then walked me back to his shop to make sure that I got back. Leave his shop unattended to get some ATM.
Be careful.
It is amazing.
I would say one thing, and it just okay, if this gets a laugh, we'll gauge the quality of the audience, but you want to be careful walking around Roppongi asking ATM, because you might get more than you bargained for. Those of you don't
know... It's a relatively clean audience, I think we can safely say. So just a quick bit on... I suppose on your memories of World Cups as well, and 07. When you look back now, how much did 07 change your life?
Yeah, I think drastically. You know, it was, a moment in time that signaled 4 years of quite a long journey for a team, and that's, a bit different to most. But we had a four-year journey with the same coach, which is, you know, quite interesting. It's not often that happens. More often than anything, we were a group of... good rugby players, but good guys. We you know, girlfriends became wives, became moms, and we created this family. And winning that trophy, you know, I slept Thursday night, you know, tossing and turning. I was you know, struggling enough, because all I could think about is, you know, you come second and it's, you know, it's it, you know, no one really talks about that. Yeah. And it's like 4 years of your life. So it's without a doubt changed the direction of my life, you know, and certainly made life a lot easier.
And what were the sort of bits that you look back on now that sort of define it for you? I mean, the journey that you've been on with the Springboks is obviously a glorious one. It was 111 caps or things. But when you look back on your career now, what are the bits that you pick out of your years with the box?
Yeah, actually, we were talking about this last night, actually, a little bit earlier, when after only a year or two. And
this morning at some point.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not entirely sure when.
And, and for me, you know, like for me, that the games and that don't make it, haven't really, aren't the things that I think back on. Yeah. You know, it's really the times that we spent on tour, the camaraderie and the things that happened, and the tough times. I mean, if I think about that 4 year journey, the things that were going through my mind before while walking out of that tunnel were, you know, all the shit times. Yeah. You know, we lost six in a row a year before. The coach and I were about to get fired, and you know, this margins are so small. Rodney Soalo came in from the side. We got a penalty. We kicked it over. We won a test against the All Blacks to survive till the next year to get to World Cup. And that was the margin between us actually having a chance of playing with the same team and coach at the World Cup. And so, and along the way, we had so many challenges, such a rollercoaster ride, that when we get together, we don't talk about Paris and we don't talk about that World Cup. We talk about the stories where guys pulled pranks on each other. And, yeah. You know, this, you know, the Bucky Spurter story, you know, every time that I had to sort of talk a referee down, when Bucky said smash someone in the face.
Again.
By accident.
Right, sorry, yeah.
I've got a great Bucky story. And it actually involves England, actually. I'm not sure if you played. Was it 05?
When he maimed Johnny.
No, that was...
That was Lovish. That was
05, it was Matty Stevens, Sauce's turn.
Oh, right.
And he was playing for England for the first time in South Africa. And Bucky's couldn't understand how this guy born in South Africa could play for the Queen. He just, you know, didn't get it. So I said, no, well, he's got sort of ancestry and, you know, he's been playing there for more than 3 years.
I love how you tried to reason with him.
Yeah.
It's a diet that doesn't eat salads. Well, he just eats meat and red wine.
Bearing in mind, Sauce is a mate of mine. So I sort of know if I don't calm him down, it's not going to end well for Sauce. So I sort of thought I'd explain it pretty well. It turns out that I wasn't very good at explaining it. And in the first scrum, he sort of loaded on the left-hand side, which is where he doesn't normally scrum. He always scrums on the tight end. And I realized that what was coming, so I sort of shifted to the right. And he came through and he hit him so plumb right here. And he split him open like the most perfect happy emoji. And he just sort of did one of these. And off he went to the dock and they stitched him up. 14 stitches later in 8 minutes. And first scrum back, Bucky says on the left-hand side. So now I know what's coming and I'll keep to the right. And his aim wasn't as good. Only 8 of the 14 stitches popped in the second shot. And then that sort of took us to halftime. And at halftime I said, Bucky, he sort of knows. First scrum of the second half. Now I'm waiting for the scrum and Bucky comes to the left. And he sort of binds and I can see the right arm's loose. And I said to Bakis, obviously in Afrikaans, because he doesn't speak a huge amount of English. And I said, Bakis, I think that's enough. And he looked up, like you sort of, when your ears and your face is pushed in like this. And he looked up, he said, just one more, please.
Poor Sauce. Amazing.
Who was I to say no?
No, yeah. You keep to the right. Keep to the right. Keep to the right. But Sauce have won that well?
It's so... Like what Jono was saying, we were out with Jono. Every time someone said you were just a dangerous human, you just enjoyed hurting people, and he was like, "I never hurt anyone that didn't deserve it." Right. Jono, did he deserve a knee drop to the back of his head? And yeah, he deserved it. It was cheating. Right. It's just so old school, but so amazing. Just the fact that they justify it with the fact that they deserved it. I'm not sure they did. We're playing a game.
I was sitting in a couch like this with Bakis about a month ago, and we were in this video.
How big was that couch?
It was big. And you know what, the beautiful thing is that it made me look really, really scared.
And before and after picture.
Some lady sort of got up and she said, you know, how do you feel when your kids show you these YouTube clips of you mangling people, you know? And he sort of took a deep breath and he paused and, you know, the whole vibe was going well and it sort of settled and everyone was like a bit awkward. And he said, you know, ma'am, it's hard to watch these clips. She says, yeah. He says, yeah, because when I see these YouTube clips, I see there were two other guys I could have beaten up.
Regrets. I've got a few. Wow, man. There's some amazing characters you've played. Can I ask you just about two other things? Meeting Mandela. And your sort of memories and the circumstances in which you met him.
Yeah, I think, look, he was a special guy, and he signaled an unbelievable era for South Africa in terms of coming from apartheid into the first democratic republic. And the one thing about him is that, you know, and I think that's where a lot of non-South Africans don't understand, is that he got a huge amount of flack in 94, 95, campaigning for the Springboks and the emblem to remain, and the Springbok to remain on the shirt, because it was you know, regarded as a sign of separation and apartheid. And he went to all through all of his campaigns. In the beginning, he was booed, and he kept on wearing the hat, the one same hat that he wore to the final. And that made a huge difference. And I think that's the reason why rugby is such a massive unifying factor in our country. But, you know, meeting him was obviously, you know, the first time I met him, I had his book. And I was proper fanboy. I mean, we were, if these guys got to meet them, we were in the back sort of trying to take selfies with Tiger in the background. That's how fanboy we were. But with Mandela, I asked him, would you mind signing my book? And he asked me, I was 22 years old, and he asked me for my name and it. And then I started meeting him more and more with the Springbok team and started to build a relationship with this guy, because he took time. And he's the kind of guy that he put his hand on your shoulder, and he brought everyone in, and he stopped you from feeling nervous or intimidated. And I got a phone call the morning of my first child being born. And it was this line that said, would you hold for Mr. Nelson Mandela? I said, fuck off, Butchie. Because Butchie was always pranking, calling. Yeah. And I put the phone down, and they said, no, this is really Mr. Nelson Mandela's line. Please hold the line. And I took the call, and there he was. My daughter had been born 3 hours before I'd had to go to training. I was on my way to training, and he said, John, I just want to congratulate you. You know, you'll only truly understand stress now that you've got a daughter.
That is what an amazing story. Did you get a little call from the palace? How does the palace react when you have a little, when you've had your first, second born?
Fuck, he's really in now, isn't
right,
he?
Yeah, exactly. Can't get rid of him now. Couple on the dotted line.
Can't get rid of him now.
The other thing I want to ask you, in 03, did you do Camp Stalgrad?
I did.
Have I pronounced that correctly?
Stalldraat.
Stalldraat.
Yeah, a lot of naked hugging, wasn't it?
It was.
Can I ask you about that, or is that sort of buried?
Yeah,
in?
For sure. I mean,
so this was Rudy Strowley, guys getting ready for the 03 World Cup, and you tell the story, but I've never really heard about it from people who were there.
So the camps are pretty usual. You guys have been in a few military camps, yeah?
Yeah.
Military camps. Yeah.
I'm sorry, we've done military camps, not concentration. It's a very fine line between
that. We took
the match. Yeah. All the staff is doing more.
So it was 3 days, and I'll never forget, we had just been announced in the squad, and like, to be fair, we had a pretty average squad. We weren't great. We were all young, and we were on the bus. We're pretty happy to have made the squad, and we were told to bring three things: a pair of TSAV shorts, I don't know what that is, but a pair of boxer shorts, a rugby shirt, which we were given, like a jersey, and a gum guard. Right. And that was it. That was all we were required to bring. And we got on the bus, and we were sort of talking and wondering what's going to come. It's so exciting, you know. And half an hour to go, we get blindfolded in the bus so that we don't know where we're going. I mean, this is like, you know, this is like a Mission Impossible stuff.
Yeah.
And we get, eventually the blindfolds come off, and we're in the middle.
Haskell got excited. Yeah, exactly. Excited by this point.
We're in the middle.
Very different. Very different.
Would have brought my own blindfold. And arse the shorts and ball gag. Oh, be prepared, isn't it? Boy Scouts motto.
Couple of handcuffs.
I don't own a ball gag. Arsenal shorts, obviously.
So we got out, and then we had sort of eight sort of ex-military guys take over, and then there was shouting and screaming, and then it all sort of started. We realized this wasn't going to be a fun camp, and we started marching. And so the whole thing was, we weren't allowed to sleep for the 3 days. And so we'd either be marching or running or crawling and doing stupid things. And I think that the intention was to bring us down to a level and then bring us up. But you know, it was pretty hard. Okay, you learn a lot about yourself. I mean, after day one, halfway through, we had to make a human boxing ring. And then Rudy Strowley would point out, so he'd say, Hasks, you and Tins in the middle, 3 minutes.
Twitching. I'd start twitching.
who'd win out of the two of you, actually?
Oh, probably Mike, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel I've got movement on my side.
I mean, listen, if
I'd just dive at his feet and pull his toe and cry like a girl.
My coach at London Shoot Fighters say if the bloke's got no defence, isn't looking and standing still, I should be able to kill him. which is a great confidence boost. But one thing I wanted to ask you, because you said about life changing, there's one person's life that you changed, which comes into a nice story about an army camp later. Ronnie Regan, you literally
saved his career and extended his career by those comments in the papers. When you, do you want to just explain what happened about this? Because honestly, if it wasn't for him, he never would have had the career he's had. Because England coaches heard what you said and took it as, fucking hell, he's the toughest bloke I've ever faced. Not realising he was an absolute gobshite. He drove you absolutely mad. Do you want to tell everyone about that?
So, playing him was, it's painful, mate. He just doesn't shut up. And like you
I know
get,
the feeling.
You get,
yeah.
I mean,
welcome to our show.
He's got huge volume. And no matter how far he goes back in the scrum or gets knocked in the tackle, his volume just increases all the time, you know. So I made a comment after the test series. I think it was a two test match series. Johnny was at 10.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I've played in a 3-week test series. I've heard more from Regan than I have from my wife in the last 3 weeks. And they must have interpreted that as him getting in and sort of like getting in the, you know.
So that's basically, the England coach has heard that. He's heard more from him than his wife. So they were like, fucking hell, the great, you know, John Schmidt has been absolutely done over by Ronnie Regan. Right, Barbara.
It gets worse though. So not only did he play longer for England, but then that test series didn't go well. We were quite convincing in the test win. And then the World Cup came next. And in the pool game, the 36-0. As he ran out, he ran. I don't know if you go back, you'll see the tape. He runs to our side. He comes back through past Bucky's boot and he says, "I've got my big mates now, mate." And then he runs back as if.
but talking about,
didn't work out very well on that day.
36-0. They're not that big.
So talking about army camp. So in 2007, when we were prepping, we standard. You think you're going to go for a World Cup camp? There's always a chance they're going to take you on some sort of military exercise. So you got put on a bus, bags on a lorry, and we're like, "Oh, this isn't good. We're not going to an airport." And we disappeared off. We actually went to down to Poole and did some work with the SPS. And we were split into different teams, and I was with Ronnie Regan. All right, Barbara, everything okay? Don't worry about that. We were in our team, and what we had to do was carry these boats everywhere, right? These long canoe boats. And on each one of the boats, they had a bailer, right? And what happened is we were running along, and the idea was that once you got tired, you swapped out. So I had myself, Fraser Waters, I think Josh Luce and someone else in our group. We talked about where Lawrence didn't do any work and just still claimed the prize at the end of it. If you want to go back and listen to the other shows. So what we do, as we're running on the beach, Ronnie was trailing behind. He was like, can't run, bad knees. We're like, what's wrong with your knees, mate? Saggy knees. They're not saggy, they're scars. So anyway, he was like struggling from behind. So what happened is he goes, "Hass, mate," he goes, all right, don't worry about it, we'll swap in. Right, so he swapped in for 2 seconds and couldn't keep up with the boat. So I had to swap back in again. I'm running along. As we're running along, Tom Palmer and his team came running past us, and we were going down a dirt track by this farmer's gate, and suddenly we heard this, and the canoe flicks off. Everyone always takes someone's head off, and Ronnie Regan's run past and goes, "Head of espionage bag." he'd thrown the bailer with the bailer on the string. It wrapped around the fence post and fucking lassoed this thing off. And he was running around going, "Espionage bag," right? And honestly, we came up to this thing, right, when it was two other bits. They had kind of a spider's web mesh where you could go through one hole, you couldn't come out the other. And he comes up to me, he goes, "Lads, two words, done it before." We're like, that's not two words, Ronnie, right? And it was honestly incredible. But there is the greatest story, and I'm going to rip it off because lots of people tell it, but it's perfect for that kind of World Cup. So in 2007, he's in the... I wasn't there, unfortunately, didn't get picked. Got lost out to some old fuckers. But anyway, not that I'm bitter. I've had... what's happened is they got to the final, obviously lost to South Africa initially, playing South Africa in the final. You know, they've looked round. Phil Vickery is captain at the time. He's saying some motivational thing. Ronnie's thought to himself, you know, this is my big moment. This is my moment. I'm going to inspire. Right, so he goes, "Right, lads, band of brothers," right? Puts his fist in. Everyone fucking looks at him like, "What are you talking about, Ronnie?" Right? So he slowly, like, apparently his hand gets knocked out of the way. So he says what he thinks is going to be the most inspiring thing. And he goes, "Right, lads, not being funny, right? But we haven't had the biggest start we could have done. You know, things haven't gone our way. But we could be like a pheasant from the flames," right? And he stopped, right? And like, bear in mind this moment before a fucking World Cup final, right? People are nervous. You've got whoever spewing in the toilet. Boys are there. You've seen Paul O'Connell, inspirational speech. Ronnie wanted that moment. He goes, "I thought we could be like a pheasant from the flames," right? Everyone's looked at him and someone's gone, "Ronnie, it's a phoenix from the flames." And he's gone, "For fuck's sake, I knew it began with F." And it was the greatest fucking shambles of all. And also, now, I'm not pointing fingers, but I reckon that's what derailed the entire thing. Kuwaito would have scored. But do you know what the best bit about it is? In rugby, right, in rugby, the world of after dinner speaking and everything else like that, everyone nicks everyone else's stories. Ronnie Regan is delivering that story that he said about Andy Gummersall. And he's, Andy Gummersall, fucking idiot, didn't realise it began with PH, what an idiot. But do you know what the best thing is? Last time I mugged off Ronnie, he messaged me on Twitter. He goes, don't talk shit about me. I've got things on you. So I can't wait to see what he's got when he hears this, because this is going to go viral.
Join the queue. Arguably the greatest rope-a-dope, actually, by sending plaudits out for Ronnie Regan. Balls it up. And here we are now with you as a World Cup winning skipper.
But you know, genuinely, John Wells, the England coach, is like, I can't believe it. Ronnie, you've rattled John Schmidt. He's fucking, he's got into his head. He's just too aggressive. And that's genuinely extended his career. He went from being, they completely misunderstood it. They thought, if you were talking about him that way, it was, I wish you'd done the same thing for me. I'd probably say
if only. Right, we're going to take a break. Who needs a drink? One or two quick refill. Yeah. Hey! Okay, so just before we disappear, we've got little bits and bobs to do. You're watching and listening to a live edition of the House of Rugby, brought to you by Joe, together with our very good friends at Guinness, here in Tokyo, with our new friends. In the company of former England captain Mike Tindall, the legend is Mr. James Haskell, and World Cup winning skipper Mr. John Schmidt. Ladies and gentlemen, another cheer, please. And a beautiful live audience. Still to come, we're going to reflect on the quarterfinals, we've looked at the semi-finals as well, and we're going to play a game of Would You Rather in this week's Perfect Port. Shh. Just to let you know, if you're in Tokyo and you want to come and join us for next week's live show, we're back here next Tuesday, the 29th, at Peter Cole's Irish Bar in Shibuya. Details on the Facebook page, 7 for a 7:30 start. We are a podcast and a YouTube show, available every Wednesday. But first of all, here is the former NBA star, John Amici, with news about a brand new show that you might want to listen to or watch on Joe.
My day job is helping businesses thrive through disruption. This show is not about business. It's about people who go from nothing, a seed of an idea, something that everybody thinks is completely impossible, and build it into this massive,
massive, massive
business. There are 1,000 different ways to be a huge success. One of the most interesting things that we're learning is that how people are failing is almost as important as how they succeed. In fact, it's integral. It's business. Pioneers is having really honest conversations with people, talking about their business, their objectives, their purpose, whether they're just out to make a ton of money and then quit, or whether they really want to change the world. Pioneers on Joe. Listen to it. Download it. Watch it. I had nothing profound to say.
That was John Amici. Welcome back to House of Rugby here in Tokyo! Yay! John Amici's new series, Pioneers, is out on Thursday. We've obviously got John, James and Tins alongside, and you would like a few moments to tell Ronnie.
No, we were just talking off. Unless you've met Ronnie and you've spent time with him, you don't realise how much of a special person he is.
Ronnie, I was about who?
Mark Regan. Oh. All right, yeah,
again, let me explain to you, this isn't an interactive podcast, my friend. I had to explain to a Kiwi bloke last week, and that accent, it does sound potentially like he might be from New Zealand again, or some sort of part of the country which allows that kind of nonsense. I know it's a big night out for you and a night off your carer, but please stop, sir. Please stop. My wife said I was very nasty to that Kiwi bloke last week. I just told her to shut the fuck up.
Yeah. How's this being nice to everybody working out for you?
Do you know what? So before we go off piece, I had a bit of an intervention last week, right? And Alex and Tins took me to one side and they were like saying that I just wasn't being nice enough to people. So they've been helping me be much nicer to people. So
which is going really well, as you can see, ladies and gentlemen.
No, well.
Shut the fuck up.
No. There was the line, he crossed it. Ordinarily, I'm being very nice to people. So tonight is the night where I will just be very cheery and chipper and very nice. Unless Tins says I can be rude if you're rude. So that's my one caveat. When that bloke got strangled, hopefully we won't have any of that this evening. Right.
Ronnie Regan.
Yes.
Mark Regan.
So obviously we're talking about Mark Regan, the fact that he's special. And there's always a story. Pheasant from the Flame is a very clever one. Well, it's not clever, is it? It's just stupid. But also, we went on tour in 2000 to South Africa. And we had two tests. And one of them was going to be to Ellis Park. All we talked about around this game is the altitude. And we're going to struggle with altitude. But we were staying at Joburg at the time. And we were flying out to where we played the games. And we did a beach session. So we did some sprints on the beach, anaerobic, getting lactate in your legs. And Ronnie's on the beach and he's doing this sprint and he finishes and goes, Jesus, Bab, fucking altitude's killing me. And all of us sort of turn around to him, Ronnie, you're on the beach. He goes, I know, Bab, but the fucking altitude gets you. Now, Ronnie, you don't understand, you're on the beach. He goes, no, I hear what you're saying, Bab, but geography, we're altitude. He's like,
just, another world.
What can you say?
Can we have him on the show one time, or would that not work?
No, because he'd probably get really angry with Hask and they'd end up strangling each other. Oh, it'd be really weird.
He's the one
who loves giving it out. The worst at taking it.
Oh, he used to, I mean, my trainer game's not the best, but unfortunately, at the same time, Nikita and myself got a new pair of Box Fresh, I think a bit of mitres at the time. And what would happen is, Ronnie would pick on one person and be incessant, and he was, like, indestructible.
So you'd
just be like this, special shoes. And you'd be like, Ronnie, you've got saggy knees, you're dumb, fuck off, right? He'd wait. No, okay, I was old, James. I'm new, James, today. Right? And he'd wait, and you just hear this, special shoes. That all he would do, and you'd defeat him and go, Ronnie, what are you talking about? You're special every single way. We'd pause, special shoes. So much so that in the paper once, we were sitting on a plane, and we were flying out to a game against Italy. We got the newspaper, and some journalist, unbelievably, must have been short-sighted, described me in the paper as a force of nature. Dad, obviously, writing columns. No, and he just, all through the whole flight, you'd hear this, force of nature, Bab. Yeah. Plane carried on. I'd be like, Ronnie, shut up. They're your saggy knees. Like, not the saggy knees, they're scars. Force of nature, Bab. Same thing on the way back, apart from someone had nicked his shirt, his trousers, and because he was so big, he used to have to wear braces. So you just hear this, force of nature. Who stole my shirt, braces, trousers? Right, we're like, Ronnie, shut up, Ronnie. Right, and you just go, force of nature. Who's got my bracers? Special shoes. It was like on repeat.
He used to pick on Voicy. So Tom Voicy, who played for Wasps, literally, he got picked for England. He got picked for Bath in like when he was 18. And he came in, he got married when he was like 19, didn't Voicy? And Ronnie was like, horse boy. Literally just talked about him in such a detrimental way. Obviously, Voicy went on one more than Ronnie ever did in his life. But that is all Ronnie does. He can give it, but then as soon as it gets to a point where someone can turn it around on him, he gets really defensive.
I think he's going to enjoy this show, though.
Yeah. Do you know what the best bit was?
I was rooming with him once on a trip, and he rang up and he lost his jumper. And all he wears is like, he's so, like, he has to have a nice car, so he used to drive the car that he had. He has a Bentley Continental that he still has with R8GAN as his number plate. What a dickhead. But then he'd ring up and he'd lose his Armani top. He goes, I can't remember what country we're in. We're probably in an English-speaking country. He's like, I've lost my Armani top. And obviously the woman didn't get what he said. He said, Armani. A-R-A-R-Y-M-A-R-M-I. Armani. And literally the woman's like, yeah, we haven't seen your top, bye.
But you know, I had to retire from giving him stick. So what I'd heard is, when you come in the England squad, there's always the senior guys, right, who want to come at you, put you in your place. Obviously, because I've always been a gobshite, it was always quite competitive as to whether I would be put back in a box. You know, there would be like, you know, late night beatings. It was a bit like that movie Full Metal Jacket, seven of the senior players with soaps in socks. Shut the fuck up! But next day, I'll be back to full action again. And what happened is that when I played I missed out on the tour to South Africa before the World Cup, or just at some point.
07.
And, 07, right? And I missed out on the tour. And John Wells had just said to me, he's like, James, you know, I'll flash and I'll bash because I wore white boots and everything else. And I didn't break anyone's fingers or rip anyone's balls off. So he wasn't on board. So he texted me off. I'd played the final and gone really well. I think I got MOM or something like that. And I texted him saying, oh, today I was a bit of both. I was all flash and bash. Sent it to him. Unfortunately, Ronnie Regan was in the lift with him at the same time. So he'd obviously, John Wells had gone, oh, look what fucking Hass sent me, you know, what a prick, right? They'd all had a good old laugh at my expense. So when I got into Ronnie next time, I was like bantering about his saggy knees or whatever else. He took me to one side, he went, I've seen you. And I was like, what are you talking about, Ronnie? He goes, I've seen you text John Wells. You don't get me and I won't get you. And that was the pact. It was like a UN pact. We just never did it. We never did it. So I think when he was insinuating earlier that I've got shit on you, he knows he's got a few things. But we had a Paul Peace agreement that we just never, ever crossed the line again. What do you think of Ronnie? Lovely chap. What do you think of Jason Aspen?
Lovely.
It's a wonder England haven't won the World Cup since 2003, isn't it? Is there a South African Ronnie Regan, or are you all fairly sort of intellectual, good chat? You said earlier there's a good bond.
I would say there was a story that I did share about another South African hooker, and I'm slightly more afraid of mentioning his name because he's slightly more capable of hurting me than Mark Regan. Right. But he was on tour and he was hungry. He went down for breakfast and they ran out of bacon and he wanted more bacon. So he went to the buffet, bacon's gone. So he put his hand up at the table and says, "Ma'am, I need some more bacon. Can you give me some more bacon?" She says, "We've run out." She says, "We're in New Zealand. You've got thousands of sheep everywhere. How could you run out of bacon?"
That needs a little swipe up to reveal. Can we find it out later? It was, or
should we make it a quiz?
Yeah, make it a quiz. We can make it a quiz. That's South Africa. Very good, very good. Should we talk? We're contractually obliged to talk for 5 minutes on rugby, so let's fulfil that part of the agreement. We don't often hand out a lot of love to referees, and we don't often hand out a lot of love to South Africans. Although now you're here, you're getting a lot of it tonight.
Yes.
But can we just start with Jaco Paper?
I am absolutely astounded that this is even a thing. Like, I am shocked to the fucking core of my existence that you see it all the time with, like, doing stuff on social media with brands, right? You have 300 positive comments, one person says, oh, they don't agree with it, everyone panics. But you think in a world of rugby where we're normally good people, we're normally kind of have a good view on what's right and what's wrong, a common sense dictate. I fucking cannot believe he hasn't been considered for selection. It's not like if he posed for the photo before the match and was like, "I'm going to do the French over," right? I would be aghast like everyone else. He's had a joke with a load of Welsh fans who've no doubt given him a bit of shit, got trapped in. Listen, if you get trapped in the Welsh, they're either going to sing Bread of Heaven, sing to you, you know. Wait, probably have your wallet on you. Do you know what I mean?
Like, I'll dress you up as a sheep and take advantage.
Yeah. Whatever.
Welcome to our Welsh friends here. See if you can understand. One or two. Well done.
I mean, listen, they were probably telling him how much they're going to win the World Cup. He would have done anything to get out of that. Yeah. Right? So he's posed for a photo. I don't understand. He didn't elbow the bloke in the face. He's not making light of anything. It's a fucking fact. It happened. Why on earth? What astounds me, right, is we live in the age of trial by social media, right? And we all say, you know, opinions like arseholes, everyone's got one, everyone thinks theirs doesn't stink. It is just bullshit. Someone should have said, do you know what? We actually stand by him. He's a fantastic referee. He did a job. It was a clear red card. He's been like, he's, you know, had a bit of joke with some fans. That's the importance of rugby. Because you start separating that, people won't do anything. We won't be able to do a show about this. We won't be able to say this. We won't be able to say that. It's fucking crap. And it should just be erased as far as I'm concerned. And I'll tell you what.
Well, now he's going. Now he's bound up.
I'd fucking sort out Brexit in 5 minutes as well. Fuck that. Marius Juncker, boom, straight in the gob. Oi, we're leaving. Who's the DMP? Fuck that lot. Honestly, they wouldn't know what's happening.
Don't be rude about Uncle Jacob.
BMP, DUP. Which, the BMP would get it as well. Let's be honest about it. BMP have made wearing a St George's flag really uncool.
Sai currently is just writing edit.
No,
Sai's just writing edit.
No.
Edit. 16 minutes, 22 minutes, take out.
DMP, DUP, whatever.
From one South African to another, have you got sympathy or can you understand it?
Oh, I was really hoping Haskwood did us know how he real if
you really. Yeah. You need to get off the fence.
Mate, storming a teacup, it's actually crazy. You know, we actually had a discussion, it's around the same thing you said about social media, but we had way more fun when we played because we didn't have that many people watching.
If you had done what you did today, how much trouble would you have?
You know what it is? I think you have as much fun as you're allowed to do. And I think that's, you know,
you're a very good politician. If you did what you did then today, how much trouble would you be in?
We would have, obviously not me, but it's some of my teammates might have had a few issues.
Yeah. I can well imagine.
I will say this. Some of the opposition that we played and socialised with afterwards did have a few problems.
Right.
But nothing ever happened that ever hurt anyone.
Right.
Okay. I tell you what, I don't believe you.
We're talking about
you're a legend of the game, but I mean, hanging around with Bucky's bloke.
The question is, has Yaku Paper done anything to hurt anyone?
Yeah.
All he was doing was helping that group, and you're right, trying to get away from the North.
Yeah, yeah. And in a world where we're asking more and we're asking for personalities and people to, you know, show up.
That's the issue, isn't it? When I first looked at it, I was like, maybe he shouldn't have his own elbow up there, but he can't stop what they're doing.
Yeah, Valmoina wouldn't have stayed in pose for the photo, would he? Yeah. So that would have been, amusing. Could we just borrow you, mate?
But ultimately, it's not a big deal, is it? It's a photo. No.
But he's missed out on the
good thing is that we've now got Garces.
Are you happy with that?
No.
Oh, my God.
Right. This group with a lot of South Africans, they are not happy about that.
Are you chewing on that?
It's a pretty big talking
point. I've actually gone off the referee, because we were out the other evening going for dinner, and the referees were in an area where we were. And I thought, you know what, I know a few of them, you know, most of them yellow carded me, you know, I'll pop my head in. I pop my head in to say hello, and I got a few sort of Nigel Owens, he waved, very nice, Wayne Barnes, a raise of eyebrows. Everyone else turned and looked at me, and I was like, lads, how are you? I was like, fuck me, when did they become celebrities? Didn't even have the time to say hello. So, you know, they can all go fuck themselves, the referees. I'm sick of that. I tried to extend the olive branch, but they were having absolutely none of it. I couldn't believe it. I wanted to know, lads, how are you? They went, yeah, do one, Hass. I was like, oh,
give it one. They all turned around and squirted you in the eye with water and wait for you to choke them out. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Wait, why are you stealing my pint?
You can't do that, sir. You can't do that.
Sir, he squirted me in the eye.
Yeah. Are we talking rugby here, or are we on to other things?
Yeah. Not even Pongy, that was.
Yeah. Can't wait for him his first MMA fight. The guy's just going to walk in. Yeah.
So this is illegal! Quick reflection on the quarterfinals. How good were England?
England were very, very good. I think they were very clinical, very... just did all the right things. I think Australia shot themselves in their foot by playing 20 phases out their own half. You know, obviously, if you look at all the stats, and stats mean actually at the end of the day, fuck all, because whatever the score is the one that counts. But they made more metres, they did everything better than England, but they lost the game by 40 points to 16. So England just played the perfect game against a team that doesn't really know what it is. And obviously, Czechos now walked away. But you have to tip your hat to England. They were just so good. They didn't give Australia anything. And they just put the ball in they're 22, let them play out, wait for a turnover, score on the end. And that, it was easy for them. I think Australia's failings made England look better than possibly they actually were. But from an England fan, that's what you want to see in terms of confidence going into what ultimately is the biggest game in the semi-final.
You messaged Checker this week.
Yeah, I did, yeah. Look, I think it's always unfortunate when, ultimately, we're still just playing a game. Doesn't matter the emotion, doesn't matter what fans and papers say, it's a game, it's men chasing a ball around the field. It's not life and death, it's not, you know, things, you know, when we went to Hiroshima and saw kind of what happened there, it puts lots of things in perspective. You see things around the world, and we remember we're ultimately paid to beat the crap out of each other and chase the ball around. It's not rocket science, it's not brain surgery, it is what it is, it's still a game. And I think it's always unfortunate where players or people who generally put effort in, who make mistakes, are sometimes ostracised when they're just doing their job. And I was very lucky to work with Michael Checker at Stade Français. I found him a very motivating, very kind of honest guy. You know, I did a column on him actually for the Daily Mail, all about him and his experience and how, you know, he was obviously a polar opposite to Eddie. He actually likes being the underdog, he likes something to moan about, he likes raising morale. But you've seen so many players come out and say, thank you so much for the opportunity, thank you so much for the time. And I think I feel sad for him that the Australian media...
Apart from Craig Cooper,
who was quite vocal. Obviously, you know, he's got his own reasons. I don't know that, I like Craig, I would never criticise anyone for having an opinion. I think it's important. I just think that he did a great job with Australia. He came in and took them to a World Cup final to lose against New Zealand. He gave players opportunities. He's a great bloke. And he tried his best. He was fiery and passionate. And he's someone that I would have followed into battle and actually wanted to go to other... So when I left Stade, I wanted to go to follow him to Australia to work with him again.
Really?
Because I really enjoyed that time, just as I enjoyed with Eddie and Jamie Joseph. So I think it's unfortunate, but that's the nature of the game. If you don't get results, you've got to walk away, you've got to put your hands up.
There's no context in that, Hask. You're just saying he's a great bloke.
Yeah.
But then, at the end of fucking, there's loads of great blokes.
Okay, let me just say.
So I also met with, when he was at Stavrante, I met with Checker as well. And he was brilliant to talk to in terms of what he is. And then, obviously, 4 years ago,
about going to play in Paris
after, you know, Stag Do 2011, you know, World Cup. Same. I needed to basically get out of the country. So I basically went and met him, and he was, like, to talk to, very tactically minded, how he wanted to set things up, very... But then you look at where they've gone over this four-year journey now, and he hasn't got the players he wants to play the way that he wants to play. But then you have to adjust to the players that you've got. That's the true era of coaching. And I think that's what he sort of hasn't been able to do, is adjust to suit the players that he's got and get the best out of those players. And him sticking to that sort of style has then undone him. But in terms of what he is as a bloke, he's not a bad bloke, he's a great bloke, but then, and is he a bad coach? No, not necessarily. He's just then going to find the right team that's.
I think the thing that's for me, and I don't know Chicker, and I do know that the players love him, but I would just say technically naive, and to say that we want to win the way we want to play, and otherwise we don't want to win at all. They actually had a team here that could play rugby, but if they, for me, and I just talk technically from a coaching point of view, if they'd mixed that up with a little bit of strategy around some kind of possession and territory and kicking, it certainly would have Give them a bit of chance.
Well, what screwed him is he comes out and goes, I don't do any analysis on any other teams.
Yeah.
It's like, you're a fucking idiot. What do you get paid for then?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying that you should always try and impose your game, but then you have to look at the other team and go, how do we best impose our game in terms of the way they defend? England play a very rigid, we're going to put you back in those corners. So how about, let's not play in our own corners. Let's get the fuck out of Dodge and then try and play in their half. Try and make it loose. Try and make it something that suits our team. And they just didn't do that. They gave, you know, those first two Johnny May tries were from turnovers in their own 22. But you're just giving it, you're feeding England. You're feeding them what they want. And England were very clinical in terms of what they did. And they just stuck to it, and you're not going to catch them up.
Yeah, and actually, ironically, it's what Argentina did to Australia in the last World Cup. Played from all over the place, and as soon as they got turned over by Pocock and Hooper, Australia scored and took the points away. It seemed on the weekend that, like Tin says, tactically, they played so much in their own half and were playing from everywhere that it's a big ask to play for 80 minutes, doing all those carries, making all that work, and actually not getting anywhere. And, you know, you need to play with that tactical ability. My point, to give it the context, was... No.
Been thinking quietly.
No, it's a valid point. You know, you just semantics say the bloke's a nice bloke. That's not what's important in sport. You know, we've got lots of nice blokes if you're not any good at your job. But for me, my experience, it was, in terms of... A lot of stuff in modern sport is overlooked, the people management side of it. People have game plans, people have tactical stuff, but they forget that the commodity is the players and how you interact. And what I found for him was the personal attention to detail of working with his individual players, inspiring them, looking at their game to then help them develop, was important. You know, bizarrely at Stavros, he did the video analysis stuff. I don't know whether there's kind of some spice. I think he does what Eddie Jones does at times, just throw grenades into the media just to fuck things off. I think he likes being the underdog, as I said. But obviously, whatever his makeup was, and I think... I actually admire partly as a coach that sticks to his guns. What I've said about Eddie is Eddie came in with his belief about how England should do things. Now, if you took Eddie's belief and transported it to another team, would it be as successful? Potentially not. But at least with Eddie, if he was to lose a World Cup, lose the next game, he would go out the way he wanted to. And that's not always the right way in modern sport. You need to be able to adapt. But what I found with old England teams is I remember in an old England regime, without throwing people on the bus, they came on board with this attacking plan. Right, this is where he wanted to attack, very wide. You had back row out on the wings, you had props in the middle playing. It didn't suit the English style. We didn't have the skill, we didn't have the ability. After 5 or 6 weeks of hammering this, the coach turned around and was like, and the players turned around and was a bit revolt and said, listen, we can't do this. So then he went, well, I'll tell you what, we're going to do this. But actually, he didn't fundamentally believe in what he was selling. Yeah. And that's very difficult as a coach to suddenly do a U-turn. It's a bit like with, you know, without being too reverent, but Theresa May, 1 minute being opposed to Brexit and suddenly have to sell it. It's very hard to do that. If you genuinely oppose it, you can't turn around and go,
It is
true. And I just think sometimes coaches have to be adaptable, but if your style is a blitz defence and halfway through you fucking try to be adrift and really passive, you're not going to be able to sell it. No, players aren't going to believe in it. So I just think that he probably wasn't, or maybe didn't, like you said, nail it for that. But my experience was he just got that player ability.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's the thing. He nailed it for 2015.
Yeah.
Like, Australia were probably one of the best teams in terms of the way they picked people apart and way they exploited defences, what they did against England. But then it just didn't work for this last 4 years. Now, it doesn't make him a bad coach. It just makes him a coach for a specific team. And will he walk away and learn from it? You hope he'll become a better coach because of it. Because clearly, as I said, he's got the players believing in him.
Hopefully we'll see him back in the game before too long. I wonder if there are a couple of Premiership clubs keeping tabs on Michael Checker. Let's fly through the others. Box obviously cancelled the dream of a billion Japanese people. How good, how happy were you with the way that they negotiated what was a pretty sort of spicy, certainly on paper, kind of rematch?
Yeah, it was a tricky game. I think if any of the other teams would have chosen a team to play against, I'm sure they all would have chosen Japan, but it is a far different concept to what they were 4 years ago and 4 years behind that. They have come a long way. They've put a huge amount of effort into this World Cup, and it is a bit of a banana peel because of the crowd and the sort of the feel-good feeling. It was really the world versus South Africa versus, you know, just Japan versus South Africa. But it is an incredible fairy tale, so we were happy to end it, but it made...
Thanks very much indeed.
But it made it, I think that added a huge amount of value to this World Cup, just from a crowd and a people point of view. But we did exactly what we needed to do. We needed it to tighten it down, and they didn't play off the top of one lineout and didn't release one channel, one ball in the scrum. And 5-3 at halftime was a bit tricky. I think if that beast had become a red card, it would have been a different game. But they did exactly what they wanted to do, and it ended up, the slow poison ended up working. And it's I'm not sure that they can handle it.
It's a great comment, the slow poison.
Yeah, so I've not heard
it was
that
like
that
slow poison.
Yeah.
Can I ask, just because I haven't seen a lot of South Africa play this, I saw the Japan game, but why is Faf de Klerk getting so much shit for not passing
it
the ball?
Me.
I keep saying, because I haven't seen it, I keep seeing memes about, you know, what's the difference between Faf de Klerk and a wash or time? It passes or something like that. It's like, I can't.
Yeah, I had a showdown on one of my WhatsApp groups where everyone's having a go and these memes come. This bloke, he is doing exactly what he's being told. You know, no one's giving the people that are giving the instructions any hassle. And the other thing about South Africans is they can become quite demanding quickly. Like 18 months ago, we would have bitten off anyone's arm for a semi-final spot.
Yeah.
We couldn't buy a win. Yeah. And now all of a sudden, not only do we want to win the semi-final, we want to win it with a completely different style that's got us into the top four of the world. And it's just sort of typical South African. But this guy, Faf de Klerk, he should not be getting gears.
No. So it's unjustified. I just wondered. Yeah,
You see this guy who just bounces out, runs, pulls strings, but that's not what he's been told to do. It's clearly. And obviously, I was at the game on Sunday, and I knew that they had been told just to wear them down. Basically, just give them the ball and just grind them down, drive everything.
Slow poison.
Slow poison. And they did exactly that. And then you look at the second half, and they just wore that enthusiasm that Japan sort of roll with to nothing, and then they pick up.
We
the
use
things
an analogy, which obviously is from the bush, but we got a snake, a python, and it's not an aggressive snake, but once it gets its prey, it gets into a
hugs it,
and
a bit like Tins on a night out.
All it does is it waits.
It slowly
Tins python. What?
Yeah, and all it waits is for the opponent just to try and move, and it tightens it a little more, and that is a fundamentally an analogy that South African teams are notorious for.
Because in the second half, they did just batter them, didn't they?
You look at Japan, though, and what they will probably go away with is they fired the wrong shots as well in that second half. They were doing high balls at their own 22 against a team that's comfortable dealing with high balls, and they're not a team that necessarily gets all high balls back. So it's not like the Irish firing a high ball out of their 19 where their wingers are so comfortable going up and getting the ball back. So they were just then giving South Africa the ball back where they wanted it, and then they could just squeeze them.
Think,
you know, it was a shame because I would have liked Japan to score in the first half when they made a few breaks, but unfortunately it wasn't the case.
The dream is over, sadly, for the Brave Blossoms. Do you want a word on Wales-France?
Yeah, I mean, I do you know what's interesting? No, I don't.
How are you going to talk about this?
Not throwing anyone on the bus. I just think it's really interesting that when you get to a World Cup, as fans and as people, we strive for that performance. You know, when you're doing your kind of warm-up games or friendlies, it doesn't really happen that much anymore. But, you know, you talk about always wanting to put performance. But for me, Wales is the epitome of just winning dirty. You know, Tins and I were talking about it, and we said the other day on the show, I joked, and I said, you know, I'm very careful because I genuinely believe Wales.
You're very careful.
It's a freaking lie. I am occasionally careful. You know, and I think that Wales could genuinely World Cup. I think they've got the ability to do it. But I don't think they've played as well as they could do. But they've won dirty. Nobody, if they got into that final, would give a shit about what happened and these things. You know, France should have won that game. France imploded. Every cliche you could throw at is the fact that France, you know, just played some sensational rugby, then just completely threw it away. I've said it before, lack of structure, lack of focus on the mental side, obviously a lot of disruption. The best thing for me that France could do is get rid of these coaches, get a non-French person in, bring some stability, bring some structure. I would 100% have someone like that in to bring that rigidity. Is he going there? Well, fine.
The House of Rugby was announced about 6, 7, 8 months ago.
Oh, what, 6, 7, 8 months ago? Yeah. time moves on, Alex.
Come to the House of Rugby for all your latest breaking rugby news.
If he's there, he's there. No one else knew. Everyone else is there going.
Put your hand up if you knew that Sean Edwards was going to France.
One bloke, three blokes. Right. Fucking hell.
Welcome to the North Club.
Nobody gives a shit. Honestly, it would have blink and miss it situation. He's still with Wales. We'll wait until he's wearing Le Bleu and we'll fucking talk about it. My point is that.
I love watching Sean Edwards try and sing the Welsh national anthem. Can you imagine him trying to sing the
Marseillaise? I think he could be unbelievable for them. I think he just needs to bring that structure in place, and France genuinely could beat anyone in the world. But fair play to Wales. They're into a semi-final. You know, I gave no credit in that Six Nations before they went on
and
won a Grand Slam.
Credit.
Well, no, but they won dirty. Nobody, listen, if they get to a World Cup final and they won it, nobody's going to look back and go, oh, well,
who
they didn't play that well,
did they? Who is the shittiest team in the quarterfinals? Wales.
Oh. Semi-finals or quarterfinals?
Well, quarterfinals and semi.
Yeah. Well, not only is he offended Ireland, he's now got the Welsh on his back.
You're only on Lance. I'm going to put a balance for you back. Wales, like Ireland, obviously, I said 2 years ago, thank you very much. Told you exactly what was going to happen. Proved right.
You've been very quiet about that, actually, this evening. Do you
want to talk about Ireland, or should we just move straight on?
No, with Wales, I still feel that.
just be careful for our sake.
Yes, be careful. They're a terrible team, but they have what they've got is they've got a very good defence structure, and they've got a very good team spirit. They have no attack, so hence why they couldn't even get anywhere near a line break against 14 Frenchmen who were literally self-imploding. But it took a rip that went forward that shouldn't have been a try to actually get through. Anyone agree with that or not? But what I'm going to say about Wales is obviously that team spirit then connects very well together, and they are winning these games whether they should be or they shouldn't be. As Hass said, they're going to be happy. Now, I said that they can never win a World Cup playing the brand of rugby that they played in the Six Nations, and I'll stick by that they shouldn't, and I'm hoping someone proves me wrong. But at the same time, they're getting shit done. They are getting shit done. And look, I want a Northern Hemisphere team to win it. I want a Northern Hemisphere team. Ideally, my pecking order goes, a Northern Hemisphere team that's playing semi-decent rugby, that can score tries to win it. And then there's Wales. But if they get it done, it's great for Northern Hemisphere rugby, but I just think that they're so rigid around how they play. If you don't give penalties away against Wales, they are going to struggle to find territory and field position. But at the moment, I'm getting proved wrong because they're still fucking winning. So
I'll be interested.
So who's the fool? Are they going to change between now and the game that they're... I mean, you are walking into two teams that play very physical, very territory-based game. Who's going to have the better kicking game? Are South going to loosen the reins a little bit? Because they've got three great ball players in Faf de Klerk, Pollard and Willie LaRue. Willie LaRue is getting so much stick. He's a fucking genius rugby player. He's not had the best three games. But when it counts, he'll probably stand up and he'll be your man of the match and he'll get through.
But even with Willie LaRue, there was a couple of times that he specialises in that kind of out-the-back pass where drawing that last defender to let his wingers go. And twice he gets absolutely smoked in that game and gives the perfect ball against Japan. But the wingers... I don't know, blokes put my offloading skills, threw it on the floor when it could have scored. So, you know, I don't know why he's getting criticised. I think for Wales, you know, I don't know him very well. I've never played against him, don't know him, but very sad that Josh Navidi's got to go home. Yeah. I think getting to a semi-final and having to miss out when he's sort of put his body on the line
whole
time is pretty...
Another round of applause for Josh Navidi.
But
I've had them on the show.
It's all right, though. You're bringing in a psycho killer and Ross Moriarty to just, you know.
But I just think for me, it's not about performance. You know, everyone wants to dream performance, but actually, if you get to a semi-final, get to a final, you've got to do whatever you've got to do. And look, everybody, every fan, every club and pub will sit and dissect it. But at the end of the day, if you're standing there with a trophy, you're standing there with a final berth, who gives a shit? And I think, interestingly enough, playing, you know, South Africa, you know, Tins and I were talking about, do Wales have the game to spread South Africa, to challenge them? I don't know. It's going to be a huge fucking encounter. It's going to be a battle of wills, battle of discipline, and that physicality is going to be off the chain. I can see Sean Edwards. The beauty about the Welsh team is they pride themselves on these big moments. You know, Warren Gatland will be fueling them all week. Sean Edwards will be going insane, talking about having to deal with that physical threat of South Africa. South Africa just, you know, they love a route one. I can't wait for that game in particular because people think someone's going to get filled in and it's going to be mega.
All things considered, is it New Zealand's to lose at this point?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you really?
I think the two best teams are playing each other in the semi-final outside England, and New Zealand have been the two best teams here. Yeah, I think you're right. If whoever gets through from South Africa and Wales, we'll have to hope for a couple of things to go their way. But New Zealand, they showed that almost like they were wobbling.
Yeah.
You know, but they've just got into a rhythm that is incredible. And
someone tasered her.
Nice.
Wowzers.
It almost sounded like a sheep.
It was a Kiwi woman. She discovered the horse she parked out the front has got a ticket.
What's
the translation of that? James Hassel's a legend. You're welcome, love.
Thank you. Shut up.
Yeah. Ireland were poor, and their cycle's just in the wrong timing. But there wouldn't have been many teams that would have been able to challenge him on the weekend. They're in a good space.
But do you not think that's funny though? Before the World Cup, the very fact that people thought that New Zealand were going through a wobble, that they ever do that. When do they ever lose consistent games? They don't. The worst thing you could ever do is have an All Black side lose a game because they come back fucking 30 times better.
But inconsistency for them is losing one game.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But I think it's a good thing. I actually think the coaches secretly, because they, you know, they've got the most winningest record of all time. Actually, sometimes you need a loss, bizarrely, and be comfortable with that loss. If you never experienced loss, it can literally derail people. You know, Prince Nazim, one fight, dusted, never seen again. I think with New Zealand, every time they do lose...
Oh, when he was 28 stone.
Yeah, exactly. You go straight off the wagon. I think when New Zealand lose, they actually come back way better. There's much more to learn from a defeat than there is from winning. And I actually, as soon as I saw that loss against Australia, I thought to myself, fucking hell, we're in a spot of bother here. And journos and cheap fans or whatever, they say New Zealand are wobble, but I think it's made them more dangerous. I actually think, interestingly enough, that England can beat them. And I think the most important thing for England to do this week is to respect New Zealand, but not talk about them, not watch them, not think about them, know the key moves. But the biggest thing in a lot of countries do, they become obsessed with them. Fans talk all about the hacker. All they talk about is, oh, it must be intimidating facing the hacker. It's absolutely not. It's like a red rag to a bull. That people, there's 12 or 15 men dancing in front of you, you just want to go and beat them up. That's it. It's not, people, honestly, you'll know the same. People who know nothing about rugby go, oh, I know the All Blacks, the ones who do the dance. You're like, yeah, we know the All Blacks. Do you know England? No, fuck, I don't know England. Do you know South Africa? No, I don't know South Africa, right? They talk about the dance, and everyone goes, oh, it must be intimidating. It fucking is not. It's just, lads, you're like, they're sitting there going, I'm going to fucking get into you, lads. So much so that I used to have a recording of that.
He definitely didn't face a hacker when Jonah was doing it.
No. but even then, I wasn't anywhere on the wing. I was on the wing. I don't agree. I guarantee you,
I was not fucking looking at Jonah when he was doing
hacker. Nobody was.
I was like, where's Andrew Merton?
Yeah, fine. Rule number one.
Just Andrew Merton's trying to do the fucking hacker is a joke. It's like, literally, yeah, I'm watching you, pal.
Yeah, but rule number one is pick the easy wins. But when I played for the Highlanders, I went over there and I met all the guys, got to know and played with them. So the next time I faced the hacker and they were doing it, I couldn't stop laughing. I was like that. Because you're seeing just lads dancing, sticking their tongue out. You're like, no, what are you doing? You're like, relax, bro. We're just about to play a game. And then obviously when you get back into it, it just has that intensity. So I genuinely think the biggest mistake you can make is talking about New Zealand, watching New Zealand, overthinking it. Just worry about yourself, deal with yourself, and meet fire with fire. That's my piece of advice.
They are your greatest rivals, and you've had some amazing days together. Were you the same at the Haka? I mean, how many times have you played? 15, 20?
For me, the Haka, for South Africans, it's a privilege. So when you're playing against the All Blacks, you know that you've sort of gotten to the pinnacle of what your career is playing for your country and facing the Kiwis. And the other thing about the Haka is that I think it's misinterpreted. The Haka is more about them paying respect to their culture and their diversity around what they want to bring people together, and then laying down a challenge, and then it's up to us to bring that to them. And when we're in that position, then we've got the privilege of playing against the greatest team that we love playing against. And they've thrown down not a challenge, but they've brought up the sort of ancestors and brought up all their traditions around what the haka stands for. And nowhere in the haka does it say we're going to kill you. We're going to, you know.
What? So the bit where they cut their throat? What's that bit? I can tell you, listen, every time you go to New Zealand, they always say it's a challenge, it's ancestral. The kids are doing it. The lady at the news agency is doing it, and everyone says it's a challenge. Everyone's offering you out for a fight. You've got to respect it, but there's throat cutting, there's spear throwing, there's whatever it is. As far as I'm concerned, if I saw that in real life, it's on, right? It's on. I'm using Dan Cole as a human shield. Once they've tired out stabbing him, I'm fully in the mix, right? So I know exactly what you mean, but let's not be lulled. It is a fight. It's an offering a fight. It ain't... Listen, if I want to see Morris dancing, that is a welcome. That's fucking... Oi, that's... Oi, you want to see people welcome to the country, throw a tissue up in the air, ring some fucking bells. We don't look threatening. Doing this, that is... I'm going to do you and probably knock your missus out as well at the same time. That's what it's about.
Sorry, John, you're very erudite.
Sorry, you're
giving a wonderful politician's answer about
it. No, we love that. I think we and I speak on behalf of South Africa, but we get as much motivation out of participating in the haka than they do. And I think that's what it really is about. You know, I mean, to be fair, if I had to be completely honest, no one ever talks about the haka of Tonga and Fiji.
No.
It's any countries who moan about the haka are the countries that can't beat All Blacks.
Yeah. Very true, very true. We've got to hand that to you. Can I ask you one very quick question before we move on? Bookies have got New Zealand, South Africa in the final. If somehow lightning strikes twice and it's England, Wales, which would be worse from a South African point of view to lift the
trophy?
Come
on, my friend, don't let the side down.
Who am I choosing between?
No, not who you're choosing. Which would be worse for you to see lift the World Cup? Who would you least like to win the World Cup?
Remember the audience, my friend. Remember, we've got an English editor here. We can change it.
I like this. We're painting you to you're a consummate politician.
It's a pretty easy answer for me. I played two amazing seasons in the Premiership. I made some amazing friends at Saracens, and it would be sort of some kind of consolation if I saw some of my mates lift the trophy.
Very good. You are very good. You are very good. I tell you what, your sidestep off the pitch is better than your sidestep on the pitch.
To be fair.
I'm generally quite worried that I'm going to have to don my Wales jersey for a night out, which would be really awkward.
If they win it.
So I said to someone
who abused me... It's a long way to go.
It is a long way to go. But I have got my Wales jersey. Bearing in mind, it is the 2003 Wales jersey that that we beat them in the quarterfinals. So
Nesting
in those fist. It'll be a little bit rub in their face whilst I wear it. But
do you want 5 seconds on Ireland, or can you bite your tongue and let it go?
No, look, I can do 5 seconds on Ireland. They're shit. I really want to bring up Joe Smith, but. I'll take 10, 15 minutes.
No, we haven't got time for that.
We've got time for
this week's Perfect Port, together with Guinness, our very good friends. It's our weekly test in 119 and a half seconds, because that's how long it takes to pour the perfect pint. You all right?
Yeah, just saying hi.
So this week, we've normally picked 15s. We've done a few other weird things. This week, we're going to play a game of Would You Rather. Do you all know the rules to Would You Rather? It's an A or a B, and you have to justify it with a single sentence, exactly what it says on the tin. Would you like to join in, or do you just want to listen to these two?
Join in,
you're in. The people hath spoken. Tins, I'm going to come to you first of all. In fact, you can both have this. Would you rather fight Martin Johnson or back his boater?
Fuck.
In fact, I'm going to flip it around. Would you rather not fight Martin Johnson or back his boater?
I think I would rather fight back his boater because I don't know the true ins and outs of his brain, like I know Jono's. So at least I imagine them both in the same boat, but I don't know, whereas I know that Jono is that dark, is that fucking... literally a serial killer that is trapped in this...
in shorts and boots.
Yeah, this body that is something out of Star Trek, like we said before, he's a Ferengi. Whereas I don't know that about Bath. I know he's hurt people in the past, but I just prefer not to know what's coming. So I'm going to take him.
You've played against and with. Who would win a fight between Martin Johnson and Bakis Bota?
Look, I've been in fights with both of them.
That is an incredible line. That's a T-shirt.
Although a fight means that it has to come from both sides. So, and I will say this, Bakis has got a far bigger punch.
Really? Yeah. Back in your mouth, I like it. Hask, would you rather fight one horse-sized duck or 10 duck-sized horses?
I'd rather.
By the way,
fight,
you're losing.
No. If I fight one.
They're all stamping
duck,
on toes.
One horse-sized duck, because one Hovis fucking loaf, and they just bang it when it's eating it. That's it. Oi, tear its wings off.
Can we set that up, actually, as a challenge on next week's show? Yeah.
Where are you going to find a horse-sized duck, Alex?
We'll grow one.
I think we went to the Science Museum, but let me explain a couple of things, pal.
Yeah. Unless we go to Chernobyl, we're not actually getting that one.
Yeah.
Would you... Here's one from... Cy has put this in. It's slightly tinged with rawness. Would you rather sleep in a McDonald's or a five-star hotel?
Yeah.
Well... I think we covered this off.
He chose to sleep in a McDonald's. Thanks for coming. Yeah. He actually chose to sleep in a McDonald's. Hoff, would you rather lose in a World Cup final or never get there?
I would... I actually know answer B very well. I would say I would rather lose in a World Cup final than never get there.
Amazing. Would you rather give up your smell or your taste? Given where we started this show.
If you look at the size of me, I'll definitely give up my smell.
Would you rather leave or remain? We're asking the member of the...
Oh, shit!
We're never going to do either.
Leave!
Hey!
I'd rather have a marrow inserted into my arse and never talk about Brexit again. That's how little I care about
again,
it.
But you'd like that.
I would.
Would you rather, Hoff, crash into the posts or fall 5 yards short of a try in the European Cup final?
Again, I've done both. I would rather fall 5 metres short because the post thing, you know, everyone laughs at it, but I nearly broke my neck. So, and also, it's been replayed. And because of the world of social media, all you lovely people in the audience keep sending it to me and reminding me that it happened. Mate, did you see this? Yes, I fucking did.
I was there.
That's my vertebrae disintegrating at the time.
John, would you rather have a genuine get-out-of-jail-free card or a key that opens any door?
Ooh.
Sure, yeah. Key that opens any
door.
Yeah,
it's got to be key.
Well, surely it gets you out of jail because it opens any fucking door,
if you,
right?
Get out of jail.
Very well thought through.
Also, bear in mind, the get-out-of-jail card means that you're going to do something naughty.
Yes,
and that's never...
You've never done anything naughty.
You've got a very good PR, I'll give you that. Would you rather be a famous film star or a famous musician?
Oof, easy. Rock star.
Yeah. Would you really?
Yeah.
With the long hair and the guitar?
Everything that's not what I currently just set up is.
Yeah, I'd be a film star, if you're asking.
Porn star. Your answer is easy because... Film star.
Rock star.
Oh, you'd be a rock star. Okay, cool. Fair play. Hask, would you rather be coached by Eddie Jones or Michael Checker?
Eddie Jones.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. I just think he's a great guy. I think he's incredible at what he does and he understands the way the team works, I think.
Okay.
And he always treated me nice. He used to bring me protein shakes in the morning when he said I was so old that I needed the vitamins. Vitamins? Vitamins.
Vitamins.
Put my teeth back in.
Would you rather have played in this World Cup but lost your personality?
The world would be a poorer place than I did. Yeah.
Or lose your personality and play in this World Cup?
Nah, I'd rather not lose my personality, thanks. It's the only thing I've got. Sadly. Well,
John, would you lose your best friend? Would you rather lose your best friend or all your friends except your best friend?
Ooh.
Oh, wow. That's a tricky one.
It's quite back deep. Is both of your best friends.
Mate, like, I've got my best friend's Bolshaw. I'll fucking give him up in an instant. Jesus Christ. Ian Bolshaw,
keep your best
off,
friend
dude.
But lose all your others, or lose your best friend but keep wider pool.
Probably keep my best friend.
Oh, I like that.
Who is your best friend?
Who is your best friend?
We were at school since the age of 10 together.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Do you want a name check, just so that they know they're loved?
Shane.
Shane, good on you. Hoff, would you rather be a great lover or a great rugby player?
Well, bizarrely, I'm actually both. Oh. So
No, listen. You've got to have two skills, you know.
Chloe.
Stay humble.
She says that's bullshit.
We've got Chloe on the line. Yes, exactly. Would you rather be handsome but stupid, or ugly or intelligent?
It's already picked, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, the ugly thing goes without saying, so I'm going to take the intelligence.
Yay. Well done, Ray. I'll do that on my own. Glad everyone backed me up. Would you rather be Joe Marler or Owen Farrell?
Owen Farrell, the cash that boy's making. Yeah, yeah. He lived at home until he was about 23. Cash under the mattress, he was about 2 inches away from the ceiling. Honestly, you know, he's good looking, talented, hard working. People really like him, they don't like me.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying, mate. But thanks for filling in my own answer.
Yeah. Tins, would you rather, and this is an either or, would you rather marry a royal or win the World Cup? Marry a royal.
Well, I've done both.
Yeah, I know.
Technically, but
marry a royal or win the World Cup.
Shit.
Well, hang on. Does it have to be?
It's an either or.
Would it be my wife that I'm marrying?
Yeah. Would you rather marry Zoe or win the World Cup?
Can we take Zoe out of it, or
you choose it?
Because obviously, if it's my wife, then I'm marrying my wife.
Correct answer.
I'd choose the World Cup. even with my wife. So, I love you, Chloe, but I'd rather...
Can you think of any other good ones that you'd like to ask John to finish with? Would you rather...
I thought of a couple earlier, but I'm not allowed to say
it. Go on, do it.
No, I can't. It's the one I talked about.
Just do it, we'll take it out.
No, I can't. I'm not. I've got fucking standards. I'm not asking that. You can imagine what it was. I'm not going to ask what it is.
I can't imagine what it was.
Yes, you fucking can.
Would you rather be covered in fur or covered in scales?
I'm not used to brushing my hair, so I'm going to go scales on this one.
Nice. Yeah. Good.
Just low maintenance. You don't have to get up and fucking... Oh, shit, it's all over the place. No shed. Well, actually, scales, you shed as well.
Wales, yeah. New Zealand. Who would you
rather... I'm doing that bit. We're going to finish. Thank you. Let's have him out of here. Shall we finish with a quick prediction for this weekend?
Yes.
Are you comfortable with that?
Yes.
The winner of England-New Zealand will be...
New Zealand.
Really? Comfortably or close?
No, be close.
Very close, okay.
England.
By. Right, such a hometown hero.
By three.
England by three.
Yeah.
I want to be proved wrong, so I've said this all along. So New Zealand.
By.
It's a 50-50 for me on who turns up on the day. So I'm going New Zealand by five.
Okay.
Let's hope they get the food poisoning they got in 90, you know, whatever it was. I'll tell you what, I'll go around and cook for them.
Susie. Waitress Susie.
Susie. Wait, they all know. Is she a national hero in town here, isn't she? Waitress Susie, eh?
St. Susie Day. Yeah. Wales, South Africa.
South Africa.
By.
What's that thing? Small margin.
Small margin?
Yeah, I mean, never bet against Gats or Sean, Wales.
You're going Wales?
Yeah, I'm going Wales, yeah. Too easy.
You're such too a tar. Easy.
South Africa by 330.
Right.
I think South Africa by 10.
Okay, the winner of this year's Rugby World Cup will be?
The way it looks, New Zealand.
That's good.
England.
England at this point.
Whoever wins between New Zealand and England.
Okay, good.
How's the crowd pleaser here?
Yeah, it's really easy, isn't it?
So easy, just four runs every ball.
When you've got the personality like me, you need to keep your friends close, enemies closer, you know what I'm saying?
You've done very well. Right, ladies and gents, that's the end of the show. I'm sorry. That's the end of us for today. Can I just, for 30 seconds, if I whip through the bits and bobs, thank you for watching, thank you for listening to House of Rugby together with Joe and our very good friends at Guinness. And thank you to our wonderful audience here at Peter Coles. Give us a cheer. Don't forget, you good people, to download some of Joe's other programming that you might have missed. We've got Liquid Football with the marvellous Kelly Cates. We've got TKO with the wonderful Carl Frampton. You can also join our House of Rugby Facebook group if you're not in there already. We've got one or two of you in the group.
Yeah. Yeah.
One or two more of you, hopefully by the end of the day. Thousands of you at the moment. You can also buy T-shirts, beautifully modelled by Hask, all aboard the Hask train. And who's the heavy breather on Tins? Go to shop.joe.co.uk. Let's just finish, finally, with a massive thanks to Mike and to James. And a huge cheer for our superstar, Mr. John Smith! We're going to be back here next Tuesday with our third and final live show. It could be England-Wales. It's likely to be New Zealand against South Africa. We'll hopefully see you next Tuesday at 7 o'clock. Lots of content to come before then, but for now, thank you very much indeed once again to the guys, and we'll see you soon. Have a great rest of the evening.
You've been listening to the House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.co.uk for the facts.